Aquí de lunes a jueves. You
the safari park.
You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry, get into bed now.
Come on, Larry! Larry! Larry!
Is there no sweeter sound than that of your own name buried in cheers and applause? I think not. Hey, have you ever been in desperate straits about something in your life? Maybe a job offer in a far-off place that you just can't decide upon. Or a love interest who may not be true blue. Or some risky surgery for you or someone you love. Indecision can be a bitch. It can tear you up with anxiety. Sometimes you get all the input from all the sources, make your list of positive and negatives, and you still can't arrive at a solid decision. Even Watson, with his 16 terabytes of RAM, could not help. Have you ever been tempted to visit a gypsy fortune teller or psychic? Plenty of people do. Even now, in our hyper-techno world, lots of cops, big-time cops in places like New York or L.A., pay out sizable sums to alleged clairvoyants to help with unsolved cases. Back to Watson and big data. Is anybody a fan of big data? Sure. NSA creeps. Big box retailers, Bezos and Zuckerberg. And the rest of us? Probably not. Big data is the strong arm of Big Brother. Like it or not, and I sure as hell don't, we live in the gotcha age. There are always gotcha weasels among us. We've just made it easier for them. Cardinal Richelieu was a gotcha weasel in the Middle Ages when he wrote, "Give me 6 lines written by the most honest man in the world, and I will find enough in them to hang him." Imagine if that robed bastard had Facebook and Twitter. And now, added to the big, big database, biological big data. Not long ago, an old pal of mine, a Polish pal, the Kielbasa King, told me his wife gave him one of those Discover Your DNA tests. What did he learn? That he wasn't as Polish as he thought. He was 22% Asian. 22% is more than a Susan. He wasn't all that surprised. Genghis and his Mongol hordes got around, well into Eastern Europe, they figure, and so geneticists estimate 1 in 200 guys on Earth now is a descendant of old Genghis. And what does that ancestry do for those guys? Before they throw down, do they inform their opponent that they carry the blood of the mad Mongol, so look out? Tell some cute Asian chick and hope it makes her interested in you. Nah, not likely. Probably better off asking about her shoes. And not long after, I was given a similar gift. For $100, you spit into a test tube, ooh, how inelegant, and mail it off to some lab, and in about 8 weeks, you get one of those perky, exclamation point-ridden emails telling you your reports are ready. I wasn't all that curious about my DNA. I'm Irish, first generation, with a little German thrown in for cruelty and some French for that continental flair. I'm told I look good in a beret. Damn good. I was also not all that curious because the company who did this wanted a load of information about me. I have a problem with that. When I'm paying some corporation $100, I don't know them shit. And if their DNA testing is so good, they shouldn't have to ask me anything. They should already know it. They demand that you register, and then, as they all do, they want you to give them a profile. I prefer to give them a silhouette of my third finger protruding from my fist. Turns out there was a little surprise in my DNA history, and I'll tell you all about that a little later. As well as my personal experiences with the fascinating gypsy realm. But why are people so interested in their own lineage? Because I wholeheartedly subscribe to the mantra of my college buddy, Fantasy Frank. And his mantra was, "Don't look back, man, that's history." To get the full story on Fantasy Frank, listen to episode number 2, New Year's with the Mob. The current family history mania did not start with DNA analysis or Ancestry.com. People have been combing back through their roots forever. Why? What are they hoping to find out? Do they wish to be descendants of royalty?
Hey, look, Joey, my great-great-great-great-grandfather was the Duke of Dunkirk. Oh, yeah? Maybe that's where you inherited your stupid fucking face.
When the Indian casinos first began to pop up, it was rumored that anyone who could prove tribal ancestry was entitled to a share of the profits. Some of that was bullshit. One exception is the Shakopee tribe in Minnesota. It's a small tribe, only about 500 members, but every one of them draws pay of over $1 million a year from the hugely successful Mystic Lake Casino Hotel. Now that would be a motivator to check out your DNA, no? Maybe this DNA ancestry stuff is rooted in our need just to be different. With over 7 billion of us now crawling over this sphere, it's getting more and more difficult to stand out. So we start digging, and maybe we discover we're related to some noteworthy person. But what if instead of a relation to Prince Charles, you find out you're a cousin to Charles Manson? You see, it can be risky poking around that family tree. You just might dislodge a hornet's nest. For some, maybe digging through ancestry just doesn't turn up anything worth bragging about, so there's always past life regressions. Aren't those great? Los Angeles is everything, and if that's your fancy, you can enroll in the nationally accredited College of Hypnotherapy in fabulous Tarzana, California, where specialists are ready to take you on a journey of wondrous exploration into your past lives. Here's the pitch. Are you curious about your past lives? Could unresolved conflicts from a previous life still be affecting you today? Do you have recurring dreams, relationship patterns, or fears you cannot let go of? Who doesn't? I'd die happy if I could just find my favorite guitar pick. It's intriguing that whenever people discover their past lives, they invariably learn they were Cleopatra, or Julius Caesar, or an Aztec king, or a Romanov. Nobody ever regresses and finds out they were a burger flipper, or a custodian at a grammar school in Fresno. Why is that? If we can't get glory on our own, we'll excavate some and try to attach ourselves to it, the way a dog rolls in a scent he wants to wear. We all need to feel as if we're somebody and special, right? Maybe that's why globalism is on the wane. Great Britain just told the world, "We're not Europeans, we're Englishmen, now fuck off." Looks like other nations may follow suit. People seem to need to feel as if they're part of some heritage, something bigger than themselves. And resident, planet Earth, is just a bit too vague, isn't it? All that does is kick us right back into the general admission seats with 7 billion other ciphers, unknown, unnoticed, anonymous, and unheralded. I forgot to ask my pal how he felt about being 22% Asian, if it changed the way he felt about himself in some way. Did he think, "Hey, I got me some Genghis Khan blood coursing through my veins. Wonder if I should give horseback a try, or maybe a little pillaging?" Trouble is, these DNA guys aren't very good at pinpointing. Asian probably covers well more than half the planet. Kinda hard to know if his Asian blood came from Confucius or some nameless coolie who drowned in a rice paddy. Or what if he descended from Mao Zedong, the monster who made Hitler look like an amateur? You'd probably want to keep that one quiet. There's a fascinating ethnic group that gets little attention and has had an aura of mystery around them for centuries. Gypsies. Some say they now reject that term and prefer to be known as the Roma people, but you still see plenty of signs around L.A. that say Gypsy Fortune Teller, right in the blue neon in the front window. Their unique history and their innate contempt for government and control and big data makes them really intriguing. Nobody seems to agree on their origins. Some say from northern India, some say from Romania, but their name is synonymous with wandering, isn't it?
And while a Finn is from Finland and a Malay is from Malaysia, a gypsy is from nowhere. They were the original jet setters, without the jets. Wherever they are is home. They don't need to define themselves by any borders or coordinates on a map. I first became interested in gypsies from my mom. A caravan came through her small town in Ireland, and for some unknown reason, a gypsy girl of 11 or 12 was left behind. Over the course of nearly a year, the kids stayed with various families, including my mother's. The girl never said much, but she could run like the wind and win at about any game she tried. One spring morning, she took her belongings and vanished. No goodbyes, no explanations, and no forwarding address. In college, I knew a guy in Bayside who lived down the street from a self-proclaimed gypsy king. Once a year, he'd throw a huge party, and the neighborhood would be packed with caddies and Lincolns and guys in wide ties and chalk-striped suits. And the women were exotic, and some were pointy. There was plenty of music and food and booze and fun. There's a terrific book by Peter Moss called The King of the Gypsies. He researched the hell out of it. And a big takeaway was that the gypsies would not allow themselves to be numbered. And no wonder. Adolf tried to wipe them out and killed tens of thousands. They were quite successful at getting through life without allowing themselves to be processed by the bureaucracy. And I wonder, as we are all now fettered by digital chains, can they still do it? Not far from my house was one of the most spectacular fortune-telling parlors I'd ever seen. They took their decorating cues from Caesar's Palace. Must have been a dozen 6-foot white statues on the front lawn, all uplit. The front window had red velvet drapes around the card table with a big crystal ball, and it was perfectly lit for a supernatural experience. Every time we'd drive by, my daughter would beg me to go inside. Finally, one night, I caved. I sort of knew what we'd see behind the facade. I think it was $20 for a basic reading. What the hell? No appointment was necessary. My daughter became a little apprehensive as soon as we walked through the front door. The house was stifling. No air conditioning. Just a small fan pushing around a haze of smoke from the Benson and Hedges that dangled from the psychic's lips. A toddler on a tricycle rode in circles in the kitchen. Behind him, the sink was piled 2 feet high with unwashed dishes. An infant in a nearby crib began to cry. The seer hoisted the kid onto her lap to calm him. She invited us to sit at a cluttered table, not the supernatural one in the window with the crystal ball and mood lighting. I could see waves of doubt and regret pass over my daughter's face. Our clairvoyant hostess gave us a verbal rundown of the mystical menu. For $20, a basic personality reading. For $50, a look into the future with tarot cards or the crystal ball. For $100, there was life coaching and spiritual guidance. She tossed these off by rote. I think the moment she saw us, she realized I was just satisfying my kid's curiosity. There was no major payday coming from us. I was expecting her to maybe deal a card or two or look at my daughter's palm. Neither happened. She just spoke a bunch of stock phrases that could apply to anyone. You are very honest. You dislike unkind people. You have much success in store for you. Someone close to you loves you very much. Her eyes darted my way. In about 90 seconds, it was over. She crushed out her cigarette. Without another word, we left. Everything comes with a price, doesn't it? You may be able to live under the radar and off big data, but it sure looked as if she was barely scraping by. Often when I do a new episode, something just pops into the ether as if providentially. There's an amazing news story from the self-proclaimed King of the Gypsies, and it seems like there's always a few kings in contention. This guy resides in Romania. His name is Dorin Ciaba. And he just sent the White House a bid to construct the wall on our southern border. In his bid, Dorian says, quote, "The execution offer is at a low price, as the Roma nation has no jobs and the financial situation is very poor," unquote. As a kid in New York, There was a big Irish population. The St. Patrick's Day parade was a really, really big deal. They'd close Fifth Avenue for much of the day, and the parade seemed endless. If you were on the wrong side of the street and needed to get across town, it could take a long while. Why do people love to watch parades and participate in them? In Pasadena, people sleep on the sidewalk so they can watch the Rose Parade. But the view from the telecast is way better and more comfortable. Parades seem to be a worldwide phenomenon. Maybe it's part of that need for acknowledgement when anybody can say, "Look at me," and bang a drum or a glockenspiel and blow a trumpet off-key and get applause anyway. And of course there's Mardi Gras, where you can parade and dance and wear a nutty costume and get loaded and throw beads and show people your tits. Maybe parades are just a license to be crazy. And those are the fun parades. How about those Russian and North Korean "Don't Fuck With Us" parades, huh? Thousands of goose-stepping soldiers with fixed bayonets surrounding floats displaying nukes. They should have some pointy babes in sashes that say "Armageddon Girl" straddling the missile as they wave into the crowd. But back to New York and the Irish. And there were what we called professional Irishmen. Guys who thought that because their family was from Killarney or Galway or some such, that somehow made them special. How does anybody's ancestry make them special? Even if it's a household name, a Hilton or Gates or Vanderbilt, so what? Unless you personally made that fortune, why should anyone be impressed? As Jack London said about trust fund babies, they stand on dead men's legs. What I want to know is, what can you do for me? Can you cure a disease? Fix my car? Shred a guitar riff? Teach me a secret kung fu death punch? Make a nice submarine sandwich? If so, now you're interesting, and I want to know more. I worked with a professional Irishman when I was in college. It was at the airport in so-called security. That hasn't changed much since the TSA takeover, and you're no more secure now than you were then. It's all theater. But to get that job, which paid a spectacular minimum wage, you had to be bonded, which meant fingerprinted and photographed, which was then fed to the FBI database. And it was on this part-time job that I met one Bob Guinness, part-time professional Irishman and full-time asshole. Bob was in his early 40s. He had a flat-top buzz cut with a nasty scar on the back of his skull. He claimed a bullet grazed him in combat, but I'd bet somebody laid a long-neck butt across his head when he got lippy in some bucket of blood bar. Bob rode an old Kawasaki to work every day, tucked his gray polyester uniform slacks into his engineer boots. Bob thought that Kawasaki gave him some cachet as well. He liked to throw his weight around, project a tough guy image. Every story Bob told ended with him kicking somebody's ass. It seemed unlikely. Being the senior guy on my shift, Bob assumed his age gave him some authority. It didn't. The boss was off-site and would occasionally visit the crew at the airport. But Bob would never have any authority because not only was Bob a jerk, he had a physical flaw that precluded anyone ever taking him even a little bit seriously. He had a total of 2 teeth in his entire head. 1 upper, 1 lower. When he closed his mouth, his face compressed to the size of a baseball. It was a goofy part-time gig, but I got a ton of laughs out of it. It even changed my life. One of the guys was Sam Baxter. Great big dude, about 6'5", not an ounce of fat on him. He'd been a DI at Paris Island. Think Lou Gossett Jr. in An Officer and a Gentleman. Sam was retired at all of about age 42 and picking up a few spare bucks. He was your quintessential take-no-shit dude, not that anyone would be crazy enough to give him any. Sam and I got to be pretty good pals. He called me Youngster. I was about 17 at the time. The job had a fair amount of downtime, especially later in the evening, when just a few flights would trickle in. So we'd shoot the breeze. It was summer, and one night Sam asks me what year I'm in at school. Well, I just graduated high school. Then he wanted to know what my plans were. Being a military lifer, you always had to have a plan. When I told him I was uncertain, I could tell that did not sit well with him.
What does that mean, youngster?
Well, I just haven't figured it out yet, Sam.
Life is not a fucking game of Chinese checkers, youngster. Get your shit together. If you're still doing this shit job in September, you will officially be a fuck-up.
I could tell the matter was not settled to Sam's satisfaction. He looked at me sideways. In my mind's eye, I could almost see the smoky bear hat on his head. I was expecting to hear him scream at me to drop and give him 20. Then he says,
"You're not thinking of joining the military, are you?"
I'd been getting a full-court press from recruiters for months, and I told Sam that I had not ruled that out. Sam's jaw tightened. His eyes narrowed. In a flash, I mean instantaneous, Sam was on his feet, maybe his toes, and towering over me, as if we were at Paris Island. He got right in my grill. I could count his nose hairs. And he seethed through clenched teeth.
"Go ahead, youngster. Join the fucking military. And every time you turn around, some motherfucker just like me is gonna have his foot up your ass. Do it!"
At that moment, I had a powerful epiphany. All the bullshit those Army and Navy recruiters had been pouring in my ear was suddenly discarded. Sam had not only scared the shit out of me, he had given me a 3D look with audio at the truth and a future that would have been totally wrong for me. Doubtless he'd trained tens of thousands of grunts in his career, and he knew, at a glance, I was not cut out to be one. "Sam, baby, if you're out there anywhere, thank you." My own father, who had been in the Navy, could have talked until he ran out of breath and not convinced me. But Sam did it in a couple of sentences. What's that quotation from Jesus? "A prophet is not without honor except in his own town, among his relatives, and in his own home." So Sam was cool. And Bob Guinness was an asshole. In my 17th summer, I probably tipped the scales at 150. And Bob thought it was just hysterical to start calling me Sparrow. Bob was a world-class needler. He would annoy you just to the flashpoint and then back off with some horseshit about taking a joke. He was really starting to bug me. Unbeknownst to me, Sam was taking all this in. I sized up Bob, and I thought to myself, even though he outweighs me by a good 30 pounds, this just may come to a throwdown in the parking lot. Sometimes, when we'd finish a shift, everybody would meet at a nearby gin mill and have a few. This is where we first saw Bob try to work his professional Irishman bullshit persona. He ordered a beer and then told the bartender his name was Guinness, just like the beer, in a ridiculous attempt to infer that he was related to the Guinness dynasty. After a few, Bob became even more loquacious and claimed to have killed a guy, got in some kind of road rage beef, pulled his purloined military .45 from under the seat of his car and put a round in the guy's chest. We dismissed it as more of Bob's bullshit. One night back at the airport, Bob starts in with the Sparrow stuff again. My rage must have been apparent because suddenly, Sam was right next to me. He leaned over and quietly said, "Youngster, I trust you'll handle Guinness in a matter commensurate with your intellect." He accented the word intellect and squeezed my shoulder hard enough to dislocate it. Sam knew I was close to slugging Guinness. He was no ordinary Paris Island DI. So I looked at Guinness. "Hey, Guinness, if you're going to call me Sparrow, you better get used to me calling you Teeth." Everybody roared. Guinness's face turned tomato red. Sam Baxter let out a laugh that almost cracked the windows. As he applauded, he said,
"Well done, youngster. Well done."
I never had to throw down with Guinness, and he never called me Sparrow again. One afternoon, a couple of guys in suits came clocking down the concourse with a purpose. They seemed out of place. They had no luggage, no briefcases, and didn't move the way travelers do. One of them walks straight up to me, shows me his ID. FBI. He jerks his head towards Guinness and asks me if that's him. I said it was. They walk over to Bob, tell him he's under arrest for murder. They cuff him and take him away. We never got the full story. But he was a moron's moron to take a minimum wage job that required bonding. We couldn't figure out why the feds were involved either. But we realized there was one thing Bob was not bullshitting about. One evening late in the summer, sneaking up on Labor Day, Sam Baxter told me he'd finished his New York tour of duty and was headed back to the Carolinas, where the fishing was better and groceries were cheaper. I never thought to ask him why he was in New York, so I did. His wife had died that spring. His daughter lived in Queens and had just had a baby, so he decided to spend the summer and help out.
But to be honest, youngster, I think she was helping me out.
I went on to college, not the military. It had been an interesting summer. And what of my DNA test? Turns out I'm pretty much comprised of the background my parents told me. But there were a couple of wild cards in the distant past I didn't know about. Some Italian blood. Tony Spumante always swore I had a Sicilian attitude. And I do like shotguns and stilettos. And then the wild card from a pinochle deck. Native American. Was it Apache? Cherokee? Sioux? They don't matter. I gotta dig deeper and see if I might be part Shakopee. Thanks for stopping by the Take No Shit Dojo. It's always a kick to hang with you. A special shout out and thanks to the wonderful Patreonies. Drop us an email at thatlarryshow@gmail.com. And if you like what you hear, slide over to iTunes and throw us 5 stars. If the spirit moves you, click that subscribe button on Patreon and become a part of dojo history. And my friends, as we march in the parade that is this life, there's one certain way we can always stand out from the crowd. While those 7 billion other guys look back and borrow glory from the past, we'll look ahead and make our own glory right now. I'll see you next Tuesday, here at the crossroads of madness and enlightenment. And until then, take no shit.